are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, November 6, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, getting platformed, Sean McKelvey, contributor to Nation Magazine, the chief meme officer of Data Progress. We're going to abolish ICE on Twitter. Talking about the races to watch, in particular, the state houses that Democrats may take. Also on the program today, 36 million people vote early, and hopefully more will go to the polls today. Meanwhile, go vote. And Trump, in a sign he may have had seen some bad numbers, tells Sinclair Media, hey, maybe I could add a slightly different tone.
Could have been a little nicer, and I think we all need to think about that.
And just a reminder, we won't spend any time on it today, but tomorrow, well, maybe tomorrow afternoon, Mueller time starts.
Oh, wow. There it is. You mean what?
Turns out Ivanka Trump, genius businesswoman, particularly when it comes to the Chinese. I wonder why.
She's very talented.
Also on the program today, Steve King drops a parting shot of homophobia, hopefully on his way out. And Amazon to ruin two places at once. Dems poised to pick up maybe 10 state houses. And you can thank Harry Reid for the most diverse judiciary ever and for Trump not having doubled the number of judge appointments. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a exciting day. It is a day that I think many people have been thinking about to some degree or another for about 2 years. And we are here. And frankly, you know, we will talk about this as the show progresses. I think we all have a sense of, you know, what we think is going to happen, but I'm not convinced that that isn't too much a function of what we hope are going to happen. Sometimes that's difficult to sort of separate. And plus, I don't know if many of you were paying much attention during the run up to the 2016 election, but some of us are a little bit shy about making predictions.
Gonna be no problem tonight. Democrats gonna sweep cross country. All vote models look great. Oh, we're gonna win. It's gonna be super easy. So just you know, vote if you can, but don't break your back about it.
There you go.
That's my message for today.
There you go, folks. Yeah, don't
not like if it's a major inconvenience, don't do it because we got this.
Yes. So there's that, and I'm not convinced that everyone who's listening to us has not already voted. What's really interesting to me is how many of you are doing like poll watching and get out the vote. We will take calls. We're going to do a quick interview and then we'll take calls in the fun half and want to hear from people who are voting. I don't want to hear from, you know, we're not going to talk about any other issues today. Want to hear from you if you're voting. Some
nor 2020,
voting.
By the way.
What's
can
that?
I add that? And
exactly.
Not 2020.
Don't want to have a debate about 2020, all that, et cetera, et cetera.
And if you didn't vote, You can delete this podcast from your phone right now.
Honestly, I don't want you watching or listening. If you're not, I mean, if you're planning to vote or you're walking to vote, okay, fine. But I mean, if you're not, go away for today.
Become a patron of TMBS.
There you go. Yes. Go give Michael some money.
Go give me some money. And as I say, it's really pretty easy. So especially if you live in a blue state, just relax.
The New Yorker is an iconic magazine that represents the best writing in America today. Beyond publishing the best writers in the world, New Yorker holds people in power accountable through rigorous reporting and compelling storytelling. I mean, think about the stories that we have heard that have just in terms of the Me Too movement that have taken place this year in the pages of The New Yorker. Everything I learned about Charlie Kirker, I learned from Jane Mayer in The New Yorker.
Yeah, Charlie Kirk.
I mean, Charlie Kirk.
That amazing, even on this show, I had that amazing piece about the Tory PR firm that works in South Africa. That was another incredible piece in The New Yorker that was like more under the radar, obviously, but they're just on everything.
The piece about Harry Reid, I mean, I sort of aware of this, but Tubin wrote a piece about Harry Reid's getting rid of the filibuster. Very important if the Democrats take back the House and the Senate that people understand the context and what the importance of getting rid of the filibuster meant. All in the New Yorker magazine. They also incorporate features like poetry, fiction, cultural criticism, and satire into every issue. This is where you get the best writing anywhere, everywhere, with home delivery of the print edition each week. Or you can read it on the go with the New Yorker Today app or, of course, via Google News. New Yorker is one of the, you know, one of the ads. Look, we screen out some advertisers. We won't take every advertiser. But there are very few where I'm actually excited that they're advertising on the show. And the New Yorker is one of those. Don't wait. Go to the newyorker.com/majority. It is the best writing in the country. Listeners of the Majority Report save 50% when they enter the code majority. So with this special offer, you'll receive 12 issues for just $6. Plus, you get the exclusive New Yorker tote bag. You can choose between the print, digital, or a combo subscription. Subscribe to the New Yorker. Read something that means something. That's 12 issues for $6 and a free tote bag when you go to newyorker.com/majority. We should keep this one in for members today just so that they hear that that deal. Oh, and folks, check this out too. Grove Collaborative, it's changing the world. 94,000 trees are cut down in U.S. every day to make toilet paper and paper towels, but seedling available at grove.co makes 100% tree-free paper products from bamboo and sugarcane. Grove carries the best natural products. All right, so I just got a box from Grove. I had the toilet paper, great. Had the paper towels, great. More than that, why is that TMI?
No reason. Go ahead.
Everybody does it. Grove carries the best natural products. They have innovative products like seedling to refillable glass soap dispensers and wool dryer balls that last for 1,000 loads. It is your one-stop shop for household, pet, personal care supplies, and a bunch of natural brands you know and love. So in that cabinet right there, I've told people I have a little smell issue. I don't know what that's from. It's new, but they have the free and clear soap dispenser. I can't remember the name of it is, but I got that delivered. I got. It's true. It's true. I can't help it. They have all the products that I like. Plus, they have a concentrate that we put into the bottles, and so we don't have to buy, you know, a crappy cleaner. All of it. It's great. Every product is vetted to be the most effective, sustainable, natural product out there. With auto shipments, price matching, and 100% happiness guarantee, life is easier and cheaper with Grove. Look, I am doing all I can to avoid buying stuff on Amazon. But there are times where you want it delivered, and it's difficult to find all natural products, cleaning products. So far, I'm loving Grove. I'm loving it. It's extremely convenient. This stuff is heavy. I got to deal with all. I got too many logistics in my life. I like to purchase, set, and save, and that's it. Boom. If you haven't already tried Grove, you need to shop today before this deal runs out. For a limited time, listeners who sign up will get an amazing 30-day supply of Seedling. That's the tree-free paper towels, Michael, toilet paper and tissues, plus a 60-day free VIP membership and a surprise bonus gift just for you when you sign up and place an order of $20 or more. Check out Grove and our special offer at grove.co/TMR for the Majority Report. That's grove.co/TMR for the Majority Report. Check it out today. All right, let's play this clip of Donald Trump. I don't know if I want to play this one or I want to play the mood thing.
The tone.
I mean, look. Donald Trump gets numbers that you and I do not get. And he gets them from Republicans. And they tend to, I think, you know, they're trying to manage his expectations and they're trying to get him out in front of things. And look, they certainly thought that Donald Trump was going to lose in 2016. It wasn't. There was nobody coming to him at noon or the night before the election saying, like, you got this, boss. So, I don't know, make of this what you will. But here is Donald Trump being interviewed by Sinclair Media. This is his favorite non-Fox owner-operated quasi-network across the country. And he's asked if he regrets anything, which is now also just remember, like, this is like literally the you remember, did you ever see the Happy Days where the Fonz couldn't say that he was wrong? Do you know what I'm talking about? He would say, and it's so dumb.
I'm very
so dumb,
like
right? But it's good.
The
I mean,
Fonz
if you're,
is cooler,
if you're
though,
10,
as far as I
if
understand.
You're 10, that's sort of funny. When you're older, you start. It's a little bit ridiculous. Okay, except for our president does that, and he doesn't do it with just like not being able to pronounce words, but he does it in like he'll take two or three words to do that.
Talk to me about this. Is something that I asked your predecessor about during his term. I asked President Obama, so I'll ask you the same thing. Is there anything as you look back at your first almost 2 years that you regret, that you wish on you, that you could just take back and redo?
Well, there would be certain things. I'm not sure I want to reveal all of them, but I would say tone. I would like to have a much softer tone. I feel to a certain extent I have no choice, but maybe I do, and maybe I could have been softer from that standpoint, but I want to get things done. We've had tremendous victories on trade. We've had tremendous victories on so many different things. On our military, you look at what we've done with rebuilding the military. But I would say if there's anything, I think tone would be perhaps something. I'm not sure that if I did that, maybe I'd be swamped, okay? You know, swamped meaning with the other side, because I wouldn't say that tone's been so nice either. But that would be something I would say that I'll be working on.
There you go. Tone, but I would
swamped meeting with the other side.
Couldn't do it. I mean,
because they would take advantage of me.
I made a mistake about tone, but it's probably not my fault.
You know, it probably wouldn't be. And even if I did it differently, it would be their fault because everybody's unfair to me. But perhaps, I don't know. And I'm also going to sort of awkwardly turn my body right now. I mean, like you mentioned 10-year-old, and he does look like he's at some function that he doesn't want to.
Tone,
there was maybe a thing that I
something
should
I did wrong. I would say,
the amount of conditional statements in there.
No, the proof is in the pudding. What happens tomorrow?
I got flashbacks to grammar. Like, you underline the conditional statements. Like, I'm going to see if we can go through this just quickly again.
Nerd alert.
One second.
No, what I like, though, is I like
count
how
the conditional statements.
Conditional statements.
This is something that I asked your predecessor about during his term. I asked President Obama, so I'll ask you the same thing. Is there anything, as you look back at your first almost 2 years, that you regret, that you wish on you, that you could just take back and redo?
Well, there would be certain things. I'm not sure I want to reveal all of them, but I would say tone. I would like to have a much softer tone. I feel to a certain extent I have no choice, but maybe I do, and maybe I could have been softer from that standpoint, but I want to get things done. We've had tremendous victories on trade. We've had tremendous victories on so many different things.
What does that have to do with
our military? You look at what we've done with rebuilding the military, but I would say if there's I think tone would be perhaps something. I'm not sure that if I did that, maybe I'd be swamped. You know, swamped meaning with the other side, because I wouldn't say that to either. But that would be something I would say that I'll be working on.
12. I counted 12.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's like,
we might have missed a few.
It's like when they ask you in a job interview what your biggest fault is, and you're like, too much of a perfectionist.
My problem is I work way too hard, and I just can't let a project go until it's absolutely perfect. So sometimes people have a difficult time working with me because I just won't sleep. Won't stop until everything is absolutely right.
I have some flaws. I not enough me time. I give too much.
I'm too much passionate about making America great again.
The problem with me is I just simply won't stop until everybody gets a great fucking deal.
Oh, boy. Folks, one of today's sponsors is newsvoice.com/majority. Look, you know that a lot of people live in a bubble. This is a great thing to pass on to your relatives who are stuck with inside the Fox News bubble, because this is a way to introduce them to other news sources, but to do it like with a soft landing. There's a media company that's come up with their own response to this problem of epistemological closure. It's called News Voice.
Tough stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of an app for iOS and Android. It could maybe
but
not be.
Perhaps you could use it on another operating system
I don't know. Look, you can access it for free if you go to newsvoice.com/majority. It gives you a personalized news feed by aggregating a mix of mainstream media sources, international sources, and independent media sources. Multiple sources are provided for each news story. This is the way that I read the news, folks. You want to get multiple angles on any given story, ideological angles, and just reportorial angles. The entire app is fueled by crowdsourcing. You can upvote stories you think are important so more people will see them. You can add stories to the app, or you can add a source that's missing for a story. It's meant to be a completely open and democratized news aggregator that lets you get every side of every story. They also have a video interview series featuring guests from like Chris Hedges to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Go download the app for free at newsvoice.com/majority. If you're listening on the podcast, we've put this address in the podcast description notes. And if you're watching on YouTube, below us on YouTube. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sean McKelly.
Sort of getting back in touch, and it's a pretty good feeling. Yeah, it feels pretty good. I get a lot of double takes when I'm coming around the corners, and it's mostly pretty nice. Yeah, it's mostly pretty alright, cause most kids give me credit for being down with it when it was back in the day, back when things were way different, when the youth of today in the early 7 seconds taught me some of life's most valuable lessons.
We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to finally provide a platform for our next guest. He is the co-founder of Data Progress, also a contributor to Nation Magazine, Sean McKelly. Sean, welcome to the program at long last.
Thank you so much for this platform, Sam.
You're welcome. Now, Sean, let's start. I mean, I know you wrote a great piece about how the implications of the way down ballot. And I want to get there in a moment. But give me what you think is going to be the top line stories coming out of after the election today.
Sure. I think there's going to be a couple. First off, we're seeing more and more candidates running on unabashedly progressive positions like Medicare for All, ending Citizens United. We're seeing fewer and fewer candidates who have A ratings from the NRA. The sort of anti-choice Democrat has basically disappeared. And the idea that you have to be anti-choice to win swing districts, which was always absurd, is gone. And we actually just did an analysis of the Upshot polling that is on the Data for Progress blog, where they asked about single payer in a selection of the swing districts they polled. And what we found is that in every swing district where they polled single payer, support was positive. So these swing district voters support these policies. I think looking at specific races, there's going to be a couple big takeaways. First off, you have black candidates performing really well across the country. We have Gillum and Abrams, who are running for governor, and both of them, I think, are either going to win or make those races much closer than I think many people expect them to be. We've got Antonio Delgado in New York. We have Lauren Underwood in Illinois. We have Colin Allred in Texas. And these candidates are all performing incredibly well in incredibly swingy districts. And I think that points to the fact that the Democratic Party has to do a better job of creating pipelines for black candidates, and also needs to stop sort of having this mold of a candidate that excludes, you know, a football player who is now a civil rights lawyer. We need to get rid of that model, and we need to sort of embrace, candidates who actually can win.
So, I mean, we're seeing, I mean, just there. So there's two phenomena here. That one is that or maybe they're on the same continuum. One is that the crop of candidates running for Democratic office in 2018 is significantly to the left in terms of their positions from their what they were in 2012, let's say. Then
sure.
You're suggesting that based upon the success that we're seeing already to this point, that they can go further.
Absolutely. I mean, there was this sort of mythology that if you're in these suburban districts that went for Clinton, you've got to take moderate positions, right? In California, we got to win over suburban moderates. And what we're seeing is two of the candidates who are performing the best in California, Josh Harder and Katie Porter, both support single payer. Looking at the Sessions seat in Texas, which is a seat, by the way, the Democrats didn't even contest in 2016. Colin Allred is running on Medicare for All in that district. So we're seeing a lot of these districts where we were told progressives could never run on their sort of values and win are poised to make big, big victories. The sort of Medicare for All point is still contested by the center, but the center has basically conceded at this point that there's actually no evidence that we have to run to the right on guns or abortion. And the reality is that the candidates are increasingly starting to be like, look, if I don't support Medicare for All, Republicans still bash me for supporting Medicare for All, and the base gets mad because I don't support Medicare for All, so I might as well support Medicare for All. And unsurprisingly, the number of candidates for Medicare for All has increased dramatically this cycle.
Do you have a sense of? Any data as to how many of the Democrats who are running for Congress support Medicare for All? Go ahead.
Sorry. The data I've seen suggests that in swing districts, it's getting close to 50%. The biggest problem that we have, because I've actually been doing a project that involves trying to code this going back a long time, and it is incredibly difficult to do because candidates tend to be candidates. So depending on how you code Medicare for All and Medicare buy-in and things like that, you get anywhere from 50% to more of Democrats in swing districts.
All right, let me just explain what that means to people who are not statistics people. It's how you define. Well, I mean, it's just.
Am I going to lose my platform?
This is you're on shaky ground. Let's put it that way. Some candidates are slipperier than others as to what they are supporting. They'll come and they'll say a Medicare for All type of situation or something like that, and it's hard to pin them down, but. At least within that area, there's some ambiguity, but at least 50% are doing that. And I would imagine the rest are saying we need to improve the Affordable Care Act in some fashion.
Yeah, to be clear, the difficulty here is that you know, there's the idea of a single payer system, right, in which everyone is sort of covered by a single government plan. And I think that when Bernie Sanders talks about Medicare for All, that's what he has in mind. There's another version of this, which is like everyone has access to Medicare through a buy-in. So everyone could buy into Medicare, but you could also get insurance on a private market. And so depending on how you code that as like a hard Medicare for All or a soft Medicare for All, you get different numbers. An example of this is like Gene Ortiz Jones in Texas 23 is a full supporter of a single payer. But you have some other candidates who are sort of squishy, and you have even more candidates who said that they were Medicare for All supporters in the primary, and then once they won, were like, and what I mean by that is a buy-in for Medicare.
Right, right.
But it's undoubtable that we are seeing candidates who feel the need to make rhetorical waves to the left, and I think that what the left sort of position on this should be is like sort of broad tent, broad tent, broad tent. As soon as you're in Congress, you need to co-sponsor, you need to co-sponsor the Congressional Caucus Medicare for All bill in the House. Otherwise, you know, you were not being honest with your voters.
Right. Okay. So and it's just a question of like, well, this is what we heard and this is what we're going to hold you to. I like the idea of litmus tests after people get elected. That to me, I quite light a bit. And you know, remember these folks, they got to run every 2 years. All right. Well, so just because we you know, this is the parlor game of this day. What do you think is going to happen in terms of the Senate before we go to the down ballot stuff?
Sure. I think we end up. I actually think the Democrats end up picking up a Senate seat or two. I think that we are really well positioned to hold on to our toughest seats. And I think we are really well positioned in Nevada, Arizona. And I think that it is totally within the realm of reason that either Tennessee or Texas, more likely, I think at this point, Texas swings to us. The reason for that is if you look at early vote in Texas, you had the Latino turnout that was equivalent to 2016, which is just unheard of in a midterm election.
Wait a second. So now, when you say that, wait a second. When you say that, because I saw this reported, Latino turnout in the early numbers are equivalent to early numbers in 16, not total.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. No, the early vote. So there's a lot of bad things that happen with early voting, and I would strongly encourage people to not look at the percent changes number. What you really want to be looking at is share of the electorate. Because percent changes can be deceiving when you have something like youth turnout that is, you know, 10%, right? So if you hit 20%, that's a 10% increase, but it's a, you know, 100%, right?
Right.
In 100% difference. Whereas if you're like, you know, old people move up 10%, that and they already turn out at a 60% rate, you know, the percentage change is actually quite a bit smaller despite the sort of percentage point change being similar. This is a sort of overly complicated for a podcast, but the sort of long and short of it is the number you really want to be looking at is what share of the electorate does each group make up compared to another baseline. And right. So when you have Latino turnout in the early voting looking like 2016, that's pretty surprising because normally in midterms we see a drop off on key Democratic groups. So the only question at this point in my mind is how much better does Beto perform with whites in Texas than Clinton did? And it is totally reasonable for me to believe that he could perform better than she did with whites.
So and my understanding is that when we look at the early voting in terms of youth turnout, we're seeing a similar dynamic, broadly speaking, not just in Texas, but in Texas as well, where they are almost twice the slice of the pie of early voters, which gives you an indication that maybe they'll be that big of an element in the electorate after the entire election is over. And that's encouraging because young people tend to vote for Democrats more than Republicans.
Yeah, and you've seen the Republican Party respond to this by in states like New Hampshire essentially implementing a poll tax on college students. And there's been incredible efforts among Republicans to suppress the votes, but you're sort of seeing finally the Democratic Party begin to take seriously the idea that its ability to win elections is heavily dependent on turnout among young people, just because of how many young people vote Democrats. You know, if you're looking at, you know, 65 plus, you know, you're seeing a narrowly positive R. But if you're looking at folks who are, you know, 18 to 34, you're seeing plus 20, plus 25 Democrat. So, you know, increasing the turnout among young people has just massive potential gains for the Democratic Party, particularly as, you know, 35-year-olds are adults now, and they're a huge part of the electorate, and they're the type of people who should be voting pretty consistently.
All right, let's talk about way down ballot. Now we've got about I don't know how many. You tell me. Maybe at least a half a dozen state houses that could flip. I mean, I'm not talking about the governorship. We could be picking up Democrats could be picking up 10 governorships. But in terms of legislators, there's quite a few that are in play. And even down below that, there are a whole host of the energy seems to have permeated the elections on all levels in a way that I don't think we've seen in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're absolutely right about the governorships. The big problem is that, you know, we're on track to pick up about 11 governorships and possibly lose Alaska, which, you know, is an independent Democratic governor. But that is less useful if you have a situation like you have in North Carolina, where the Republicans have such a supermajority in the legislature because they've gerrymandered the district so much that they can just overturn the will of Roy Cooper. So what we're seeing the Democratic sort of base do is there is a concerted effort to make a couple things happen. First, flip a bunch of state legislatures. It's actually very possible that Michigan goes from being a Republican trifecta to a Democratic trifecta in a single day. That has almost never happened, but there is definitely a possibility for huge pickups in the state Senate and in state House. You're seeing in Colorado and Minnesota, which should be blue states, there are still you know, chambers that need to be flipped. And then you're also seeing some plays like in Florida and North Carolina, where what Democrats are trying to do is basically pick up enough seats that they can flip the chambers in 2020 and be really well poised for another round of redistricting, where they both have the control of the governor and also have control of the requisite chambers to ensure that they have, I can't swear on the show, right? So fair.
Yeah, you can. Sure. Oh,
they have the unfucked districts.
Oh, Jesus. No, I didn't realize you were going to say that.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm joking. Sorry. I'm joking.
Shit, am I going to get no platform again?
Enjoy your last time on the show, buddy. You can't say stuff like that.
I really am.
Well, and just to remind people, too, what happened to Cooper in North Carolina, Cooper wins the election, and essentially the legislature says, oh, incidentally, all the powers that the governor has, we just legislated them away. You no longer have the ability to pick committees, to pick commissions. You don't have, like, basically, we have just turned you into a figurehead by taking away all of your powers as governor, particularly in the context of stuff that may build political power for the future. What other states are we looking at? Virginia, in terms of what other states can we see there's a chance where we will have complete domination of the state electoral apparatus, which is huge because we got the census coming up in 2020, right?
Yeah, well, Virginia had their elections last year, but in New York, there is actually, and this is surprising to, I think, a lot of your listeners, many of whom may live in New York, the Democratic Party has never actually had a sustained trifecta in the state of New York, by which I mean they've never had an entire legislative session in which Democrats controlled all three branches of government. And they need to flip one state Senate district to make that happen. And that is almost certainly likely to happen. And that means, I actually have a pretty large bet on that. And that means that the Democrats will finally have the chance to pass single-payer health care in New York, to pass voting reform in New York to bring, you know, automatic voter registration to the state. So there are those sorts of blue states where sadly we are having to continue to make progress. There's also been some bullishness in Wisconsin. You know, there's been Scott Walker has been incredibly hard to unseat. But, you know, Democrats have a candidate in Tony Evers, who's one of the few statewide Democrats, though he strictly speaking runs as a nonpartisan for the superintendent of schools there. And there's also a very exciting LG candidate named Mandela there, who is very exciting for progressives and has sort of been definitely talked about as a sort of future star of the party. So that's the other key thing we're seeing in state legislatures, is that as Democrats pick up state Senate seats and governorships, they create a bench of politicians that can make the sort of next generation of senators, House members, governors, and things like that.
All right. I want to ask you a question about that, but I also just want to remind you there is a special election in Virginia. Carter Turner versus Joe McNamara, and I believe the House of Delegates hangs in the balance.
Drag me, Daddy.
But there you go. Sorry. I mean, I let you swear on the show. I had to do that. But let me ask you this, we have the leadership of the Democratic Party is baby boomers, right? And there is a real void, essentially, in terms of leadership and exciting politicians of people of my age who are in between. However, when we get down to people of your age, a little bit older because you're quite young, there seems to be more there's more energy there, and in many respects, we could be looking at the skipping of a whole generation and moving to sort of a millennial generation of Democratic leaders. Give me your sense of that, if that tracks with what you know from your data.
Yeah, so there's actually a good political science literature suggesting that descriptive representation is very important for voter turnout. What that means is that having people who look like you, who share important characteristics of your political identity. And increasingly, age is something that is a meaningful characteristic to someone's identity. This was not true in the past, but it is now. You can increasingly predict how someone votes based on their age group. It's not the only predictor, of course, but it is a salient characteristic. So what is really positive this cycle for me is seeing candidates like Abrams, like Finkenauer, like Gillum, who are young, seeing candidates like Beto O'Rourke, so that young people sort of feel a stake in the political system that they have not had before. They saw politics almost entirely as a spectacle of boomers, you know, roasting each other and failing to use social media. And now all of a sudden there are candidates, you know, in deep blue districts, you know, you have candidates like Ocasio-Cortez who represent and look like them and speak to the issues of the way that they speak to issues and like are digital natives. So they know how to use social media in a way that's not embarrassing. And I think that that is absolutely something you're seeing here, that you're going to see a wave of much younger candidates, a much more diverse set of candidates. For the first time, probably ever, the sort of majority of Democrats who are on the ballot are women. That's including all districts, not just swing districts. So we're actually seeing a sort of Democratic class of candidates that looks like and talks like and shares the values of the Democratic base, when for the longest time, you know, under 2006, Rahm Emanuel, the strategy was actually let's get a set of candidates that doesn't represent the Democratic base, but sort of represents what Rahm Emanuel thinks a candidate should look like, which is almost exclusively a white male small business owner.
All right. Lastly, Kara Eastman, because this race strikes me as one where, you know, to the extent that, I mean, and we obviously don't know, but to the extent that lessons are drawn from this election, there's, you know, if there are two sides to this argument about what should candidates look like and what positions should they take in reddish or purplish districts, people are going to try and use Kara Eastman as example of let's say why we couldn't take Omaha just give me your take on that. And there's a couple of those races where there's a feeling that the Democratic establishment did not want to support a Kara Eastman, let's say, because they didn't want that to be a hammer used against them in the future.
Sure. So we actually looked at the Upshot data. So Upshot, the New York Times Upshot polled Nebraska's 2nd District, and they found Don Bacon leading. But they asked in that poll, do you support a single-payer healthcare system? And in the same poll that had Don Bacon leading, a majority of likely voters also supported single-payer healthcare. So, like, there's not a lot of evidence that if Kara Eastman loses, she lost because of single-payer healthcare, because we know from polling that that's actually what the majority of people in that district support. And it's, we also know it's not true because we have candidates like Katie Porter, Colin Allred, Josh Harder, all running on single-payer, all strongly favored to win their districts. So I think that the problem with trying to cherry pick, you know, these districts is that in a lot of cases, there are actually other factors going on. In this case, you know, there really was the party didn't invest a lot behind Eastman. I think partially because they felt like she didn't deserve to be the candidate, even though she, you know, won the primary fair and square. And you also have Don Bacon being a sort of more popular than average Republican incumbent, possibly because he hasn't had quite as many ads, you know, run against him that would drag down his favorables. But I think that there are lots of explanations you can have for why Kara Eastman doesn't win, if in fact she doesn't. You know, I would say if there's a sort of blue wave scenario, there's entirely possible that that district comes onto the map. But if she does lose, it would be weird to me to immediately blame a policy position she took that the sort of gold standard of polling, you know, New York Times, Siena, suggests is popular in that district.
Right. All right. Good. I mean, I think that's important for people to know because we're going to see that story, right? Somebody's going to write that story. And I hope I don't know who the person is, although I have a guess. I think I know who it is.
Well, Sam, that's why people should go to the What the Hell Happened blog, where we'll be demolishing these pundit mythologies.
Wait, where? What is it? The what blog?
The Data for Progress is running the What the Hell Happened project, which is our sort of comprehensive coverage of the midterms with data and polling and analysis.
What the hell happened, and what is the address on the...
WTHH.dataforprogress.org.
Wow, that really rolls off the tongue. Why didn't you just get WTHH.com?
Well, because then it wouldn't be a... Well, you can go to WTHH.com.org, but it'll direct you to that.
Okay, well, that's easier.
I got to get that sweet, sweet traffic so the donors know, you know, in my Alexa rankings that we're doing good.
Well, I know, but if you forward it to that site, you'll get it the same way.
That's true. No, but it does work. WTHH.org does work. I feel like your listeners are smart enough to, you know, that they can hear the long route.
I mean, why would you put obstacles in front of people? Look, this is part of the reason why you've been so deplatformed. That and the filthy mouth. Sean McKelvey.
You have Eric Levitt on every freaking week, and I have to
You know, we grabbed dinner. He mocks me. He says, "Oh, I was on a Sam Cedar game tonight."
We'll try and balance that out. Sean McElwee.
Thank you. It means a lot for our rivalry.
Sean McElwee. Really appreciate your time today, man. Folks, we'll check that out. WTHH.org. Appreciate it. Yes. Appreciate it. See you, buddy.
Thanks,
bye. I should explain to people that for a long time after, I think it was like he waded in to a Twitter argument or one-sided discussion I was having with Dave Rubin. He was not responding to me. And saying, speaking of deplatformed, you not having me on your show is like being deplatformed. And then that just sort of like it grew over time. And then I was actually hesitant to have him on the show at one point because I didn't want to ruin the sort of the joke that we had going, you know, that I was deplatforming him. But, you know, all good. Well, not really great jokes. I mean, I guess
basically it was an inside joke for you.
Yeah, it was just basically an inside joke. It was really, it's more like, it's not even an inside joke. It's sort of like, I don't know.
Well, now handshake. It's an inside joke for everybody who listens. So.
I feel like an inside joke for me could be the name of your entertainment memoir.
That's right. Inside joke. Not for publication. But Sean McElwee, folks, check out WTHH.org. They do really good work there. Really, really smart stuff. And the more that his stuff gets out there, and gets the attention that it deserves, the more candidates will start looking at that data and understand, you know, they don't necessarily have to listen to the besuited consultant who comes in with the cookie cutter program from 1994, essentially to try and run for office. And so, all right, look, we're going to do this quick. We're going to head into the fun half. We will take phone calls, but I want to take calls from folks who are either give me a report from their polls. Maybe they're doing voter protection if they're an attorney or a paralegal, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So try and do that.
Yeah.
Folks,
IQ and race,
yeah.
You're up.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Hi, there was a dispute several months ago where you and Michael Brooks.
No, it's just going to be like as soon as the first person calls in, Sam, I just have a problem with you. And like, okay, well, like, you have a half hour. Let's right. go at it.
Sam, I have some concerns about actually not, I think Bernie will win, but the reelect in 2024.
Folks,
I think there's some scenarios we're not outlining here.
At 7:30 p.m. tonight, Eastern Standard Time, we will start our coverage. There is, we're going to have a sense at 7:30. We're going to have a sense of how the night's going to go because we'll have, I think by 7:30, we're going to have a sense of what's going on with Joe Donnelly. If Joe Donnelly is about to win or has won his Senate race, there's reason to believe that the Democrats have all but won the House at that point. And then as you go a little bit later, there are some other, like that Dave Brat race in Virginia is a big one. There's one in Kentucky that'll also give you a sense. I mean, these are like, you know, sort of the suburban style races.
On the fun half, can we each pick the one person that we would most like to see lose, just in terms of like the strongest contempt? Who? No, I'm not going to pick Cruz, if that's what you're saying. I have another pick besides Cruz.
Okay.
It might be interesting. Yeah, who would we get the most personal satisfaction out of see going down?
Oh, well, this is...
Well, wait, we're not doing it now.
In the
we're
fun
not
half.
Doing it now. Yeah. We're not doing it now.
I like Sam's like, I don't know about that idea.
okay, it's a good one, but not now.
So 7:30, tune in. Joining us tonight will be, I don't know, a cavalcade of people. So stick around. Some will be in studio. Some will be on the phone. We will be drinking and hopefully celebrating, making up for 2016.
For not celebrating, I am not staying for right, all coverage. We should just walk away.
Let the recording still continue.
We can do it tomorrow. Weigel can explain why there's going to be no future for humanity on Earth.
That's right.
Can't forget to do self-care.
That's right. Folks, don't forget, you can
self-care
support,
show with Sam Cedar and Michael Brooks.
Support this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. It's not like a backslash thing, like apparently the data guy doesn't realize is an obstacle to people going there. Jointhemajorityreport.com. For pennies a day, you can support this program. We give you extra content every day in the form of the Fun Half. And also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Michael, tonight is Tuesday.
Yes.
Preempted.
This is like live MR coverage of the election.
Brian Williams preempting.
You should do like a Brian Williams. Like, will you apologize tonight? Michael Brooks' show is not.
We'll play
here.
The Danarchy theme.
Yeah. However.
Just interrupt it in the middle.
This reminds me of the time that Benjamin and I were abducted in Romania.
Exactly. Always a
that
pleasure.
Anytime you do a Williams impression, just has to have multiple fake anecdotes
right.
that show unusual physical courage.
And with us tonight, a real pleasure to have him in the building. He is one of the best board operators that operate their boards, and we are happy he is operating the board for us tonight.
He usually operates the board for TMBS at this time, now operating the board for us.
You have
the same board, same operator,
fingers.
Different show. Michael Brooks is here, but on a different microphone.
There you are.
Because we are indeed doing live coverage. that is the Williams, the constant right. looming back. All right, two TMBS live shows next week. This Sunday, Bill Fletcher Jr. is joining us, and we might unlock it for a sort of not only a post-election breakdown, but the sort of longer-term historical trends that he talks about, veteran black Marxist, labor unionizer, and political theorist. On the homepage of the website, buy tickets to February 1st for our first live show at the Bell House with Bhaskar Sankara, Alona Minkowski, Trevor Beaulieu, the special guests. We've sold about a third of them, and we've only had them up for a week, so get yours quick. Patreon.com/TMBS.
Jamie, the Antifada.
Yeah, so this week on the Antifada, we have Jay Firestone, who wrote a pretty amazing piece for Commune magazine about his 3 months infiltrating the alt-right in New York.
I still have that lined up on my Insta paper.
Yeah, check it out. It's amazing. He got into the Daily Stormer Book Club, the Right Stuff's Pool Party, the New York Forum, which is basically like the Nazi version of the Historical Materialism Conference that we have on the left. And of course, our friends, the Proud Boys. We talked about what that experience was like for him, who these people are, how the different groups interact with one another, how they view Trump, as well as anti-fascist tactics, why only the far left can effectively fight the right, and what leftists can and should be doing to fight the Nazis right now.
I had a joke back in my early days of stand-up about why hate groups were increasing under Bill Clinton. And I was talking about like, how does that happen? Like what, you're tired of one white supremacy group because you want to join another one because they have better health, better dental. That's what that reminded me of.
I particularly like the setup.
Yeah. I mean,
you really sold it.
I didn't. I wasn't doing the joke. Thank you. Oh, Jesus.
And I'm doing another thing later. Thank you for giving me the evening off. I feel like I shouldn't say what it is because it is a direct competition.
You can say what it is. Jamie has decided to do Chapo Trap House tonight instead of Majority Report.
You know, I wear many hats.
Wow. The loyalty factor is just life, none. That is so sad.
Well,
and Sam just accepts the cucking. Matter of fact, cucking.
I feel bad. I do. I'm sure you guys will be okay without me.
She feels bad for cucking you, Sam. Yeah.
But I will be appearing in my official capacity as the official Antifa liaison to the Democratic Party. So
there you, go.
You understand that's really important
to
me.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, sounds like a whole lot of good comedy ahead tonight from all quarters.
Matt, now I know that tonight you're going on Pod Save America. You won't be with us. But
not in the wilderness with Tommy Vitor.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. Wow. That's a deep cut.
Yeah, Literary Hangover. There's some patrons-only content this weekend. And coming up this week, this Saturday, is going to be Hope Leslie, which is... I'm trying to make it a... it sort of got erased from the canon for sexist reasons, but I think it's one of the greatest early novels in America. So we're going to be talking about that.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. We'll be right back in a minute.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danner theme song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks, fucking reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych.
Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
A hell of a lot of bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
The alpha males are back. And the Africans are black. African. And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black.
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.